2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me this week is not my typical co-host. Dylan White is on vacation somewhere up in the wilderness of the Yukon in Canada. Some cabin he has in a remote location. Got a picture of him and his pooch in a lake. So this week, stepping in, it's our pinch hitter call up from not really like AAA. It's just almost like another team. It's more like a European transfer window kind of situation where Jacob Rudner from our college team is on loan. So welcome, Jacob. How's it going, man? Thanks for stepping in.
It's going well. It's good to be back. This is not my first transfer to the Ponce show, so it's it's always fun to talk about fantasy baseball.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we got a big call up. We've had a few recently, Visayo and a few others, Dylan Beavers, for those that have, I think, kind of been following along at home this year, been a top performer as well. So that was maybe bigger than what the hype was. Owen Casey's another one. But Bubba Chandler is coming up to the major leagues finally. I feel like we've been talking about Bubba Chandler potentially getting called up now for 4 or 5 months, 6 months probably, because we were talking about it in the offseason. It happened a lot later than we had anticipated. First 2 months of the season for him were tremendous. The last 2 months have not been very good, 2+. You kind of break it into, I dug into his season a little bit. There'll be an article on Baseball America this morning, probably digging into this, but looking at like his first 11 starts where he was tremendous versus his last 14, where he's not been so good. The numbers kind of speak for themselves overall, but I'll recite them for you. So over that first 11 starts, just basic ERA stuff. I know it's not real advanced, but 2.03 ERA. Over that span, 48.2 innings, 35% of the batters he faced, he struck out. Opposing batters had a 181 batting average against him. Doesn't get called up at that point. If you kind of remember the end of May, it kind of reached fever pitch at that point where the fans in Pittsburgh, I think the national media, as well as all of us prospect nerds that cover prospects, we were all kind of clamoring for this guy to get called up. It doesn't then happen. Over the next 14 starts, the numbers and this happened almost immediately, from his first start in June, I think on June 4th, over those 13 starts, 5.96 ERA, the strikeout rate drops to 21.2%. That's a huge difference between 35%, of course, in opposing hitters hitting .302 against Chandler over that period. So it really is the tale of two seasons. So I start to dig into things a little bit in Synergy. I have dueling Synergy screens open, looking at the two samples. And it's AAA, so I'm more confident with the right stringing of pitches, et cetera, that I know things are what they claim they are. So, I'm digging through and the strike rate's the same. The chase rate is fairly similar. The big difference was the miss rate, the whiffs. The whiffs had gone down. The swing strikes had gone down. But it looked like it was primarily against the four-seamer because, Synergy in the screen, as you know, breaks it down by pitch type. And so that's kind of easy to follow and just kind of pick that out surface level. So I'm thinking about Bubba, and I'm looking at the plots for just fastballs, but because you can separate it by pitches. And I'm looking and I'm seeing, now granted, between the two samples, we'll say one was 430 fastballs, the other one was 588. Okay, numbers stuck in my head for whatever reason. So there's a difference, there's a delta here of, 160 fastballs. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to start digging into locations, and you can break it down by different quadrants. So if we cut the zone and the shadow zone and all the area around the plate where someone could miss, right? We just broke it into like top, like bottom, middle, top. I eliminated all of the fastballs in the middle and the bottom, and I just looked at the top. The difference in those two samples, okay, is only 30 pitches, right? Which, when you consider what Bubba Chandler's superpower is, which is landing that fastball high in the zone and dominating with it, right? That's sort of what he needs to do consistently. So the delta being only 30 pitches, I said, well, let's figure out what the percentages are. The percentages of his fastball used, how many of them in this good period were in the upper quadrants or over? And in this bad period, what percentage of his fastballs were in those same quadrants? The difference is 60% when it was going well were in the upper quadrants. And when things are going bad, it's 48%, which is a pretty substantial difference in terms of locations. We're not necessarily talking about strikes or something that's going to fully be picked up in strike rate. And it's not going to get fully picked up in chase rate because he's throwing less chase pitches, essentially, when you look at where he's located, because he's missing in the zone now where he was missing above the zone before. And at worst, that's a ball, right? But at best, it's a swinging strike. It's bad contact, like a pop-up. And even in his bad period, he's still getting chases in those quadrants. He's still getting swings and misses, not at the rate that he was getting before, which was elite. But he's still getting those pitches. And what I also started to notice too was that his location to left-handed hitters with the fastball really started to bleed glove side a lot more. He didn't get beat up a ton on those pitches, but just in terms of where the locations were, they were coming in on the hands more to lefties, where, you know, a four-seam fastball like Bubba's, you know, it rides, but it also runs a fair amount. You know, he runs it 8, 9, 10, 11 inches arm side. Just like a changeup, when you're attacking lefties, you kind of want to attack in the outer half of the plate because it's not bleeding into the middle of the plate. It's not a center cut fastball. It's a fastball that's out on the edges or maybe even just outside the zone. So I think a lot of his struggles, Jacob, I know this was a very long preamble, but I think a lot of Bubba's struggles have come down just simply to fastball location. And everything works off of that. He's never going to have great command. He's always going to carry a few more walks than I think you'd like to see. But the big thing for me is like utilizing his fastball in the way that it plays the best, where, you know, if he's locating it low or in the middle of the zone, it's a lot easier to kind of guess on the location of that and time it up and catch a barrel than it is when he's locating up high and potentially missing, you know, just above the zone, which is often a really good miss pitch. And more often than not is going to get a swing underneath the ball, whether it makes contact or not, where, you know, you're bleeding into the heart of the plate, in on the hands of guys, like they're going to be able to time that even if you're throwing 98, 99, 100 miles an hour a lot more frequently. So I don't know. I don't know if this is something that the Pirates were cognizant of like, there's a lot of kind of smoke and mirrors in the early performance. And they were saying, hey, he can't live just living high fastball all the time in the big leagues. And they're trying to vary the locations, or it's just simply something mechanical that I can't fully pick up, or something he's feeling in his arm that we don't know about, or whatever it might be, that he's just not locating as well. It's not as crisp, not as clean. But the only thing that really jumped to me was that, because even the secondaries in the first sample were located primarily low in the zone. It's a slider and a changeup with a downer curveball that he's been throwing way too much, but that's a whole other pocket of the information we don't have to get into. But his secondaries, more swings and misses, worse contact and worse results against in the first half when he was locating low in that zone and the fastball was more consistently high. In the second half, where that fastball location is down a little bit, all the secondaries are playing worse too. And it just feels like things aren't tunneling, playing off it. He's just not zoning the ball into the right spots. And ultimately, I think like that's kind of going to be the tight rope that you walk with Bubba Chandler. And my cat officially agrees with me on that. What do you say, Dylan? I mean, Dylan, Jesus, I called you Dylan. Jacob.
Wow. So first of all, disrespecting the transfer immediately. But No, I think it is interesting and a little bit concerning. I'll point out, you mentioned something about how he's feeling in his arm. He's sitting on 100 innings, and his career high is 119 and two-thirds last year between AA and AAA. So I do wonder if there's a little bit of a fatigue factor here potentially setting in at this point in the season. You mentioned how he's missing fewer bats at this point. That doesn't really surprise me if fatigue is going to be what's causing this. As a Bubba Chandler owner, however, in a dynasty league, I'm hopeful that this role that he's going to take on with the Pirates in this long relief bulk innings eater type situation could benefit him, maybe just allows him to throw a little bit freer. He did walk almost five batters per nine in the minors this season, which is obviously a concern. But again, if he's going to come out of the bullpen, which is the plan as we understand it right now, I do think that maybe there's a chance that we see the stuff tick up again. Plus, there's always the amp and excitement that comes with being in the big leagues for the first time. And I don't think that it's wise to discount the mental aspect of that promotion and what it could potentially do for somebody. But the sticking point for me, without reiterating the things that you said, is after 19 innings, he will be at a career high. So it could be a fatigue thing. I know that we're towards the end of the year, so he's not going to blow away that 119 and two-thirds total. But again, it's late, and he already is in triple digits in terms of innings thrown so far this season.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if it's partially fatigue, it's set in pretty early. Because we are talking about, like, June and July as well, which, you know, I think is still a concern. It's why it takes so long for prep pitchers to be major league ready, you know. It's 6 years from like when they get drafted until they actually have like productive full seasons as starters, you know, and part of that is injury. And part of it is, you know, it's such a tightrope that you walk as a pitcher in the big leagues that, and just in general against good lineups, but you know, any mistakes can really be amplified, you know, with big hits, a couple of mislocations, you walk a guy, You leave a fastball over the wrong part of the plate. You hang a breaking ball. You know, you can pitch really well and give up five runs. Like I saw Peyton Tolley a couple of weeks ago, give up five or six runs, and you know it was a missed opportunity on a really easy double play to second base that didn't get made. Guy gets on, misses with a fastball, it gets obliterated, walks the next batter, and same thing, he missed on two pitches, walked a couple of guys, didn't get some luck, and then the next four innings was really good. Like, you know, I had more whiffs than he had in his best start from AAA so far. You know, it's just how that goes. So I think that's part of it. You need to be equipped, you know, to sort of walk that tightrope and know that there's just pitches you can't miss with that you can in AA, you know. You can miss middle with 100 mile per hour fastball in AA, and there's plenty of guys that are going to swing through it or take it down the middle without even swinging. There's a lot of those guys too, you know, frankly, these days. But yeah, so that's just kind of buyer beware early on, at least in redraft leagues with Bubba. I think long term, there's still a ton of upside. The secondaries need to get better though. Put a little bit less pressure on the fastball to always be so precise. I think, you know, that's also part of the commentary as well on him. But could be interesting out of the pen, and, you know, could throw some smoke, have some electric innings, you know, not against in a shallower league where you can make daily moves where you're streaming relievers and, you know, get an empty spot and there's a chance he pitches, go for it, you know, and we'll see if they stretch him back out. But I think your point about the innings probably is going to limit that from happening. They're probably going to keep him somewhere around 120 again, I would imagine. So that's Bubba Chandler. Should be interesting to see where that goes. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about something quite interesting. We're going to dig into a little bit of Jacob's college knowledge. We're going to ask some questions, kind of comparing last year's draft class to this year's draft class, and see if there might be any difference makers for 2026.
When your business has an opening that you needed to fill yesterday, there's an easy answer to your problem. How do you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your posts jump to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. For us, Indeed has made hiring easy time after time. We get great candidates who find us on Indeed, and we can do the entire hiring process all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed, and listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? I just took the True Age test from True Diagnostic, and I will soon discover my biological age. Biological age is a powerful indicator of how fast you're aging internally, which directly predicts your risk for serious diseases. Here's why that matters. Research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means you have a lot of control over it. This morning, I took the True Age test. It was easy. I answered a few questions on my phone, watched a video that showed me how to perform the test, pricked my finger. I didn't even feel the prick, to be honest. Provided a sample, then dropped the sample in a mailbox. It's a prepaid envelope, so I didn't even need to go to the post office. In about 2 to 3 weeks, I'll get a detailed online report about my aging and health, fast and hassle-free. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use our code BA2022 to get 20% off of your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use BA2022 at checkout to get 20% off your order. Your future self will thank you.
All right, and we're back. Live on the podcast with Jacob Rudner standing in for Dylan. I'm going to try to call you Dylan at least 3 or 4 more times. Not totally by mistake. I'm going to do it on purpose now. The first time was definitely by mistake. I'm so used to having rants like that with Dylan because I don't host the pod with JJ. So I'm like so used to it always being like, and back to you, Dylan. And it was like, Jacob. That was fun. But like I said before the break, I wanted to lean in a little bit to your college knowledge. And, you know, even before you came to BA, you have been covering college baseball for quite a while. I think what's great about talking to you is you're an avid fantasy player and baseball fan, someone who follows the minors as well, does our Marlins coverage. But also, you know, you're a Dodgers fan and someone who follows MLB and plays in fantasy leagues. So you have some context with all this stuff and a lot of really good firsthand knowledge to draw from. So this year's rookie class had a lot of standouts from that 2024 draft class, guys who barely spent any time in the minor leagues. Of course, we're talking Nick Kurtz. We're talking Jack Caglione, though that didn't necessarily materialize at the big league level just yet. Chase Burns, who's been up and down. But I do think, you know, when we're talking FYPD, anything you get in that first full professional season from a player that you draft in the offseason, because you're not, if the guy debuted with like Nolan Shanuel before the FYPD, he's, you know, you already know that. You already know that he's going to get, but getting anything that first year, I think is always gravy. And you're typically looking down the road. So like, if you're a Cags owner, I wouldn't be panicking right now because he's going to get opportunity. He's already been up super, super early. We know he has these ability. He has the ability to now adjust, get back to where he was. But I guess my question to you is, who are the fast movers? I don't anticipate there's going to be a rookie of the year candidate who puts up historic numbers like Nick Kurtz. We haven't seen that generally over several years, right? But is there that guy who can come up next year, whether it's early or even midsummer, who could potentially be a difference maker in all league sizes, shapes, and scoring formats? Are there a couple names that come to mind? Are there any hitters?
Well, so that was going to be the biggest thing for me. I think that the biggest difference between the 2024 and 2025 draft classes are that the hitting talent is not as strong. And for people who pay attention to our amateur coverage over at Baseball America, and you've heard Peter Flaherty and I talk about this on our podcast, this offensive class was not nearly as robust. There are just not tons of guys who have profiles that we think will move quickly. I think Merrick Houston with the Twins, if he continues to hit and he's off to a great start, potentially could be somebody who moves quite quickly. He has a middle of the infield profile. He's going to hit the ball a lot. We know exactly what he is. We've also seen a willingness from the Twins, especially recently, to start promoting guys a little bit more quickly. And so do I think that he could be a candidate? Sure. But again, this is not somebody who's going to go out there and hammer the baseball. I don't necessarily think that he is the prototypical fast mover. However, 6'3", 200 pounds, like I said, very hitterish guy. Maybe that's somebody who moves up. You want to get a little bit sneakier on the offensive side, and I know this is going to be much to your chagrin specifically, but I think that Devin Taylor's bat is a bat that could, in theory, move quite quickly. He has all of the traits offensively, and I cannot emphasize enough, offensively, not defensively, to move quite quickly through the minors. This is somebody who last year hit the ball really hard and often, 94 mile per hour average exit velocity. He wasn't necessarily the most efficient swinger when it came to balls in the zone, and that's going to be something that will be maybe a drag on him as he tries to move up quickly. But you look at how often he was swinging the bat, and maybe you could say that he was a little bit passive. He was 39.5% swing rate last year. Do I think that that could be coaxed to be a little bit higher? Possibly. And with how hard he hits the ball and just the type of hitter he is, plus the contact, overall contact rate that he ran last year, 82%, that could be somebody who I could see moving quickly. If you want to talk about value fast from this draft class, though, it's absolutely on the mound. And you can go through the first round, and I think that there are at least three names, maybe four, who could move quite quickly. Tyler Bremner being the second overall pick to the Angels. We are all, as you just mentioned, Nolan Schanuel, very well familiar with how quickly they like to promote. You and I, specifically on the Fantasy Podcast, have talked about how he had one of the top pitches in the draft with a very, very good changeup. I think he's somebody who can move quickly. That's partially because of the organization, but also because I think he's a better pitcher than people gave him credit for when he was drafted slightly earlier than maybe expected. Cade Anderson, no secret, that's probably a really easy one. The Mariners are great developers of pitching. He's reasonably advanced. I'm not so sure that there's a ton of projection left in him. We know what Cade Anderson is. Could that move quickly? Possibly. And then I go down to the bottom of the first round. Gage Wood to the Phillies. That is somebody who I have had a lot of confidence in for a while. I've talked to several college coaches and scouts over the course of the last couple months, all of whom have said, in no uncertain terms, that they thought Gage Wood was in the conversation for the best fastball in this draft class. Liam Doyle is there too. I think that's another guy who can move quickly, but those two players profile to me as pitchers who could move fast if for no other reason than, like Bubba Chandler, they could potentially contribute out of a bullpen at some point next season. I don't know if that's the kind of value you want to be super confidently investing in right now, somebody who's going to end up in a bullpen at least to start, but those are two pitchers who have the traits to go quickly. And I know that you like guys like Kyson Witherspoon with Boston. I think that's potentially somebody who can move quickly. So to me, to kind of sum up everything I've just said, if you're looking for fast value from this draft class, it's probably on the mound. There are a couple hitters who I think could go quick. Taylor, I said Merrick Houston. Andrew Fisher is somebody who you and I like a lot. Another one of those guys who just hits the ball really hard, does a really good job of making contact, isn't too aggressive to a point where it hurts him, and he's off to a solid start. He's hitting the ball hard in the minors already. So those are probably the names that stand out to me the most. I'm sure that there's going to be somebody who I didn't just say that's going to be a rapid riser and make me look stupid for not saying their name, but I think that this is a pitcher over hitting class overall, and those are probably your best bets in terms of fast movers.
And you know, the other part of it too is when you look amongst the college class outside of Ivar Arquette, There aren't a lot of guys with good hitting traits. Fisher, you know, you want to throw Ike Irish in there, Charles Davelin and others, Compton, Devin Taylor, Petrie, Henry Godbout, who's just hitting the crap out of the ball right now. I'll give shout out to the Henry Godbout guys. Outside of Arquette, none of those guys really have defensive value, which is what's going to help you move more. When you think about those guys over time, obviously Nick Kurtz is a phenomenon. And also went really, really high and I think was more advanced than any hitter in this draft. Spencer Torkelson was more advanced than any hitter in this draft at the time of the draft. Andrew Vaughn, we're seeing what Andrew Vaughn apparently always was, but at the time of the draft, he was more advanced than anybody in this draft. And I also think it's the teams. The teams that took college hitters aren't necessarily teams that are going to move these guys quickly. I don't think the Orioles are going to move their trio of college hitters that they got in the first round, you know, an Irish, Bodine, or Aloy. I don't think any of those guys are going to move up to the majors next year. You know, maybe Gavin Keelan, if he really hits the hell out of the ball and is playing well, and the Giants have a hole at second base, I could maybe see that. I think the Twins would be similar if there's a hole at shortstop and Houston's really hitting. But even if Keelan or Houston got called up, Jacob, and can correct me if I'm wrong here, like both players, I think Keelan has great plate skills. Houston has really good plate skills and good angles as well. Questionable on the power maybe with both. I don't think they're going to be impact fantasy players right off the bat. They're more guys that if you have them in Dynasty, you're going to try to stick with them for 2 or 3 years, and eventually they get their sea legs underneath them, maybe gain a little weight, and they hit their power peak years at 25, 26, 27. But even if they move quickly, I don't expect them to be impact bats. And even if guys this year, like Cags, wasn't an impact bat at the major league level, we at least had that anticipation. And there is some value to that because you can trade those guys away. So, yeah, I think it's just the difference in the college pitching classes maybe isn't that different. You kind of had the two guys top or whatever. Maybe even a few more this year that could move quickly. And the difference is the hitting. You don't have a bunch of high level names. Cause Bizzano was hurt, but I think, you know, had he been healthy all year and was producing, they moved him up pretty quickly. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see, where all this goes. Let's change topics a little bit here. And had a little bit of an awkward transition because I could have had a good one off of Bizzano, but I wanted to ask you, moving away from Kurtz, we're going to use more examples from the Oakland Athletics, the Athletics, where they play, where their home is, shall not be named. They're nomadic. Who's this year's 2026? Who's this year's Jacob Wilson? Who's the guy who's finishing his first full pro season this year that you anticipate could be a needle mover next year in 2026? Is there anybody like that from this college class that maybe hasn't debuted yet that you're looking at and saying, I'm going to draft that guy in redraft because I think he could give me 400 plus at bats of really quality statistics? Is there anybody like that or maybe a few?
It's hard not to say JJ Weatherholt. And for those who pay attention to our online coverage, that's somebody who we're shooting up the rankings and he continues to climb. He's top 10 prospect in the game right now. And it's really looking like he's primed to impact. I mean, he's having a fantastic season. Somebody who I think next year could come up very quickly, if not right away. And you can slow me down there if I'm wrong. But I think that JJ Weatherholt is positioning himself to be highly valuable for fantasy owners next year, especially in redraft leagues. He's obviously owned, or should be if you're playing with competent people, in all of your dynasty leagues. But it's really hard to think of anybody who tops the list over him. You mentioned Travis Bizzano. That's another guy who I think, providing he stays healthy and can produce early next year and has a clean spring training, that could come up quickly. But yeah, I don't know that there's any name other than JJ Weatherholt who stands out as brightly as that. Are there other guys? For sure. But JJ Weatherholt is on a tear right now, and he's really doing something impressive. I struggle to imagine that he's not very quickly valuable in fantasy next season.
So here, I'm going to throw one out there that's kind of not neat in the sense that it's not a college guy, but somebody that I do think could debut as a second-year pro. That's our number one prospect, Connor Griffin. I think when you look at Pittsburgh's situation, I think you look at the fact that they don't get aggressive in free agency. They don't want to pay in free agency. It's a lot cheaper to try to get Connor Griffin up to the majors. See, I messed up my Pirates prospects too. It's not just co-hosts. Get Connor Griffin up to the majors and, you know, potentially he's already your best player. You know, O'Neill Cruz does some remarkable things, but everything that O'Neill Cruz can do for the most part outside of maybe the throws from short in terms of miles per hour, but he's not playing shortstop any longer, so it doesn't matter. I was calling Bub again. Connor Griffin can do that. So I think, you know, when I sort of look at it, I think Connor Griffin's a guy who could come up next year as a second year pro and have some impact and maybe has a runway because he's in a situation where he's in the organization that's most devoid of talent at the major league level. And that's not going to change. You know, what do you think about that? Is that crazy?
I don't think that's crazy. And it actually, it like sparked my brain to think about somebody else who I think is worth talking. What about Carson Bench with New York? I mean, somebody who was a two-way player in college, now he's just a hitter, gets promoted to double A, goes crazy. We move him up 65 spots from number 98 to number 33 on the top 100. He was our biggest riser in our latest update, our final update before the prospect handbook. Hard to argue that that's not somebody who's going to potentially make an impact with the big league club next year. He's the Mets' number one prospect for a reason. He's one of the hottest hitters in minor league baseball right now. I believe he is on the injured list at the moment, but
yes.
I'm pretty confident that Carson Bench belongs in the conversation that we're having right now.
I'll throw one out at you, okay? And I am as big of a Travis Bazzana fan as you'll find. I love Travis. Chatted with him many, many times. You know, in person, Travis knows me. I know Travis. I'm a big fan. There aren't many players I cheer for as hard as I cheer for Travis. That said, if you had Travis Bazzana and someone offered you Carson Bench right now, straight up, would you make that trade?
Probably. I mean, I think there's a lot of helium. Yeah, I think I would. There's a lot of helium behind Bench's name right now. Like we just talked about, you're probably investing in the hottest hitter in the minors right now in terms of prospects and what they're doing for their stock. I, again, struggle to imagine a scenario in which he's not a major league contributor next year. I'd probably do that trade. Am I crazy?
No. And here's the thing. There's a runway for it too. They're good in the corners. They're pretty much set in the corners, right? Soto could DH too. Soto's under contract for many, many, many years. Okay. Brandon Nimmo is under contract until 2030 is the last year of his deal. So quite a long time. All right. You could obviously play Nimmo in center if you want. They are not right now. They're playing Cedric Mullins there. So wherever. But there is an outfield spot that's up for grabs because Cedric Mullins is going to be a free agent after the year unless they decided to re-sign him. Starling Marte is out of his deal this year. It's the last of this four-year contract. He's getting paid $20 million to just hit lefties right now. Good for you, Starling. And then Mullins, as I said, is a free agent as well. So there's the kind of thing where Bench could potentially walk right into a starting role next year. I don't think that's crazy. And especially the way that they view him and the way that he's performed, and as fast as Carson Bench has moved as well, you know, they're kind of signaling that a little bit. I don't know. I think that Bench is potentially the guy because, you know, he's on the IL right now in AAA. So, I mean, they already have him at the highest level of the minors. They didn't have to do that. You know, they could have kept him in Binghamton a little bit longer. He wasn't even there that long. He was only there for 32 games, you know? So I don't know. I think that Benj is probably the biggest mover and probably the dark horse name in this situation or this conversation. That's a great one. Well done.
Let me ask you about one more guy. I'm just curious. What do you think about Kalen Culpepper? Somebody who was drafted last year towards the back end of the first round. He's having an outstanding season this year, played in the futures game. I think that he could be on the fringe of that list. Maybe not as quick a mover as we're talking about with some of these other guys, but I also wouldn't be like floored by seeing Kalen Culpepper make an impact at some point next year, at some point, not right away.
Yeah, I think it's possible. And the thing that's working in, you know, his favor is, of course, he's had some serious time already in the high minors as he was up in AA pretty quickly, but he's a good defender at shortstop. And whether they play him at short or second base or third base, I don't think really matters because I think he can do all of it and do all of it pretty well. I'm really high in the defensive tool there. The impact's still going to come. Doesn't really pull the ball a ton, which is something for a guy like him, he's going to have to really optimize those pull angles. The bat to ball was really good. He's a bit of a free swinger. Like it's maybe like a 30, 31, 32% chase rate, but it's not like obnoxiously high. And he's really aggressive in the zone that if he swung just a little bit less overall, that chase rate's probably going to plummet into like, you know, normal average territory. And I think with a hitter like that, hitting the ball around the field, using your speed, getting the ball, you know, in play, making hitters work a little bit isn't necessarily a bad idea. That's not to say that I don't want to see him hit homers and that's not more valuable from a fantasy perspective, but could hit for a high batting average, steal some bases, get on base, and his glove could keep him in the lineup and he could accumulate some runs, stats like that. And I think we sometimes overlook guys like that and what their potential value could be. So, yeah, no, I think that was a good one that you called up there. All right. Last question here, and then we'll wrap up. Kind of like a prospect soapbox a little bit, similar to what we do on the Prospect Pod with JJ. Is there one player that you've added recently or just generally maybe you have rostered that you like more than maybe consensus or those that are out there that you want to stump for? And maybe recommend as a player that should be picked up if he's out there and available and you're able to add prospects at this point in your season. Who's your recommendation?
So here's the thing. I know before and off the air, you and I talked about my guy, Luis Cova. I cover the Marlins for BA. He's somebody who's had a lot of rise up in their system, now up to number five. I would say that he's probably a fringy, maybe a little bit further than the fringe, top 100 prospect right now. If I had to peg another Marlins guy, though, who I think is super interesting and worth talking about, let's talk about Kevin DeFrank. We have had some pretty outstanding video on him. Our colleague, Josh Norris, when he was down in the Dominican Republic, got to see DeFrank in person. And every review that he gave, and this is also every review that I've heard from talking to sources at, you know, the pro level, guys who are evaluating these players on a day-to-day basis, DeFrank has some serious stuff. And we're talking about a fastball that could grade out in the 70-ish range, maybe at some point next year. I think he's due for his stateside debut at some point in 2026. If he doesn't get that call at some point late in 2025, I'd be interested if you're in a nice deep league and you're looking to fill out your minor league roster. Kevin DeFrank is not somebody I'd be shy about rostering right now. The fastball is into the triple digits rather consistently. He's touched, I think, 102 at this point in the Dominican DSL. I mean, those are the qualities that you want to look for when you're trying to add a player who has some upside. And we do have him now ranked rather prominently, so it's not as much of a secret as it was before. He's the number six prospect in the Marlins system. But again, good fastball. He's got developing off-speed pitches. The control is a little bit all over the place, but that's to be expected for some of these super young guys, which he is. And the fact that he has this workhorse type frame that I still think he has some room to grow into, plus the shapes coming out of his hand, they really intrigue me. And I think that that's probably a good stash at this point. And I can tell you that he is one of the guys who I have stashed on my minor league roster at the moment. So I do not have Luis Cova. That's the other thing. You before the show, you told me to talk about somebody who I've added. I do not have Luis Cova in my league. I do have Kevin DeFrank, and I think that other people should too.
Very nice. Very nice. I had DeFrank in one league, but ended up dropping him because I needed to use those roster spots. But we'll not talk about that when he's a big star. But he's still, I think, floating out there in that league again. So somebody else in that league that's listening, going at him while you still can. Guy I'm going to call out this week is the same guy I called out as my prospect soapbox, and I'm writing him up for tomorrow. But I just find his trajectory and path to be really, really interesting. And that's Joshua Baez of the Cardinals. I think in deeper leagues, he's probably already long been picked up. But I think it's time to kind of pick him up in even shallower leagues, like 12, 14 team leagues where there's like 150 prospects rostered. The difference year over year and just this year versus his career in terms of the end zone contact rates, in terms of the chase rates, and it coming with power and great angles and all the tools that Joshua Baez has always had, the big arm, the running ability, he has a chance to go 20-50 this year with the lowest strikeout rate of his career by a substantial margin. His contact rates now are squarely average to maybe slightly above average. The swing decisions are above average. The angles, as I said, are great. There's always been 70 raw power here, and it's now showing up in games. And I think he's going to get to even more of it. And he's a really valuable defender because he can play all three outfield positions, probably best in the corner, has a huge arm. He's going to keep runners honest. He's the kind of guy that you're going to want to keep in there day in and day out. He's hitting against righties. He's a right-handed bat, so he hits against lefties. I got to be honest. I really think that this guy could potentially debut from the Cardinals next year and might be the best breakout story of the season that we're not talking about. You know, just turned 22 at the end of June. Northeast guy certainly was, you know, a helium name and a guy that was had some notoriety as a prep. People knew who he was, you know, as a first, a second round pick, but got kind of late first round money in that draft. It's finally all started to click. And I think, you know, you look at the underlying numbers and it backs up a lot of the baseball card or, you know, stat line slash line number 284, 387, 478, 14 homers, 46 steals. That's 46 steals on 53 attempts too. So he's been, you know, above that 80% marker, 13% walk rate, 22.4% K rate. It's like a 107.1, 107.2 90th percentile EV, high barrel rate. And as I mentioned, the bat to ball skills, the contact rates are very good. And not just very good for Joshua Baez, very good for a power hitter and a guy that's doing the kind of damage that he has, that walks as much as he does, that also has tools. I think he's actually a top 100 prospect. And I think he's a sneaky, sneaky buy as a potential rookie that could have some impact in 2026. So I'll get off my soapbox finally and put my Joshua Baez hat in the closet.
There you go. I like that.
Yeah, I think he could be an interesting one. And I think you're right with DeFrank too, of kind of buying now before the hype gets crazy once he comes stateside, because it could go.
It's going to get fast.
Real crazy, real fast, as you said. But this has been another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. I want to thank my stand-in co-host, Jacob Rudner, for sitting down with me this week and talking through some of these names. I thought this was an interesting podcast. And those that are out there listening, thanks for tuning in as always, guys. We'll see you next week.